You're listening to the Real Reading Podcast.
I'm Hugh Fort.
I'm Rachel Nemeth.
I'm Paul Mann.
And I'm Tom Canning. And welcome to episode 122 of the Real Reading Podcast. You can like us on Twitter at Real Reading Pod and search Real Reading Podcast Group to join us on Facebook. Only Paul was in the script at the time. I had clearly written the order that you were supposed to say your names in, and you have all failed miserably.
So busted.
First test is done. However, we are taking a look this week's headlines, of course, which includes A Tale as Old as Time, Nightclub to Become Flats, this time on Duke Street. We're talking council tax rises, so I'm glad Hugh is here for that one. And if that wasn't enough, it's a chance to get on Mastermind. No prizes, of course, for guessing Paul Mann's specialist subject. But before we get into that, I should say hello, Paul.
Hello there, Tom. How are you doing? And hello, everyone else as well.
Hello.
Hey, Rach.
Hi, I'm back again. I've made it back. Week two.
And I've not written Hugh's name on here because I wasn't actually expecting him to be here, but he is. But hello, Hugh.
Hello, what a lovely surprise for everyone. I'm
it
here.
Is. Absolutely flipping delighted.
Always a pleasure, Hugh.
It is. For you.
Paul. Paul, you've had the jab. Are you walking around with a bit of a swagger? Are you hugging people? Are you kissing them? You know, European style, not like full on.
Have you grown any extra limbs? Or
do you have?
When you wake up in the morning, do you make the Microsoft Windows startup noise?
It is strange, but I do have a natural feeling now, an affinity towards Bill Gates I didn't have yesterday. I don't know why that's happened.
Yeah.
I'd like to say a disclaimer out there, that's not actually true, just to stop any conspiracy theories. I went yesterday to have my vaccine at South Street. And it's all very smooth. Everyone's heard about how well it's organized, brilliantly organized. And no, I'm not really a massive huggy person, Tom. So I won't be around going doing that.
Fine. So it was good. Did you, South Street, did you take in a show while you were there? I don't know. What?
No, I didn't. I mean, I don't know what kind of show they would have had
opportunity
on.
Opportunity.
Like Sweeney Todd or something? I'm not quite sure.
So it all went very well, though. Obviously, we've talked about it previously on the podcast. You are not an old man, but you are an at-risk man. So that is why you've had your first jab. Lovely stuff. My mum and dad have had their first jab.
Are you feeling invincible, Paul?
Well, I mean, as invincible as one can. Yeah. I'm getting there. I've got the AstraZeneca, which slightly appalls me, I've got to be honest, having a bit of Oxford juice running through my veins. But I have to take it, don't I? So in 3 weeks' time, I will be feeling pretty good about it. So, yeah, no, it's a very, very positive situation.
I feel a little bit of Oxford going through you is a small price to pay for freedom.
Well, I don't know. I'd rather have had the German one, I'll be quite frank.
Do you get a choice, or is it just
no.
This is
like, no.
Okay, fine. No.
It's just cool. Whatever the surgery that or vaccination centre's got, isn't it? I think. Whatever
yeah, it is. Yeah. A lot of people I know have had the Pfizer one, and I look at them now jealously. I really do. Sure, it'd be fine. No, it is good to get it done because you see all the people there. The scariest thing I've done in the last year was actually going to have it. Because actually you're in an enclosed area, and I haven't been in an enclosed area with people I don't know for a year now, and actually funneling through and waiting and then sat there in the room with probably 15 other people. That's the highest risk I've been at COVID actually since last March. And I understand that's the way they have to do it.
Yeah.
But hopefully you won't be hearing from me in a week's time that I did get COVID there. That would be the ultimate irony.
That
but
really
I don't think so. I think it'd be fine.
When do you get the second dose? Do you know yet?
haven't had a date yet. I suppose it's when they have to tick another box, isn't it? There's a political point there, but we'll move on from that. It's, it's kind of, we'll wait and see, probably in 3 months' time.
Excellent news. I was going to do, I was going to stick Jeremy's intro in here, but I feel like we're probably going to have time to do this. Just to move just on from sort of COVID, because you can end up talking about COVID all day, and we all talk about COVID all the time, and I just don't want to, but I'm glad you've had the jab now, Paul. I wanted to just move on to Hugh and the phallic statue, which has come about.
Yes, should be erected in Reading Town Centre anytime now.
This is a line I never thought I'd hear on a podcast.
Excuse me, slightly unfortunate wording of that sentence, but
I did it on purpose. So this
time for you to stand up, Hugh, for this one. Come on.
So this is the news that is it Southampton Street.
Oh,
and it's the old antique shop. Is it Southampton Street? Not Southampton Street at all. Pell Street. This is the news that the antique shop on Pell Street is looking at possibly being developed into something or other. I didn't pay too much attention to what it was actually being developed in, because more to the point, Hugh on the group chat for Berkshire Live highlighted the fact that in the garden or in the back of this antique shop once stood what he thought or what he felt sure was a phallic statue, and spent a little bit of time, Hugh, trying to work out whether that was true or not. Was it true?
Yes.
We think.
No, well, there's evidence. So the reason I thought this, I saw the planning application, and I'm off work this week. This is the exciting life I lead. I read through Reading planning application when I'm not working. I saw the planning application and I saw the old shop there, which had been closed for a number of years, and remembered me and my mate Adam, formerly our Reading Evening Post sub editor, on our way back from cricket matches. We used to drive past this, shop, and one day we noticed that there were a number of ornaments, I guess you'd call them, in the garden, which of course we thought was hilarious.
Multiple ones.
Yeah, there's two or three, and they were sort of grey, concrete coloured.
How big are we talking?
Waist height. Not massive, not like protruding in the skyline. But
I feel like we're on really thin ice here.
Yeah.
I just like the way that Rach first thing says, how big?
How much editing is Tom going to have to do here? I'm sure they were there. I mentioned this to my colleagues and no one knew what I was talking about. And then I contacted Adam straight away, came back to me on WhatsApp. Yes, definitely, I remember them. And then I was like, right, how am I going to find this? How am I going to prove this to the doubters? So I went on to Google Maps. Google Maps has this wonderful facility where you can go back in time, which I've used for various stories over the years to compare how Reading and Slough look now compared to then. And if you go back to September of 2012, on Google Maps, with the view of the shop in front of you, you can actually see these phallic statues in the area to the left of it, proving not only was I right, proving most importantly that I was right, and that my memory is not failing me in my old age. So I don't know if anyone ever actually purchased any of these things. They were there for many months. They were there for, from what I can remember, a whole cricket season. Coming back from there between April and September 2012-ish, I guess, possibly before. And then if you move Google Maps forward a year or two, I can't remember exactly, but they're not there. So I don't know if they were thrown out. I don't know if people have them in their houses.
You are very concerned with these, what's the plural? Fallacies. Phalli.
Well, yes.
So are you asking if anyone else remembers, please get in touch?
Yeah, there will be people who, there are houses all along there.
There are.
Opposite. And so presumably there would be people who lived across the road when they had these things in the garden, and that it's the sort of thing you notice. And so if there is anyone out there who can, I mean, I've said there is definitely photographic evidence from Google Maps, but if anyone can shed any light, if people who used to own the shop might want to come forward and explain why they had a number of statues.
I looked on eBay and I couldn't find any here.
Waist high phalluses. We'd love to know. We'd love to know more.
Okay.
How much are you prepared to bid for them, Hugh, for your back garden? You know, would you be interested in actually purchasing?
Well, I've already got three, so.
You do stock garden stuff in your shop, so could this be a new line of ornaments? Of things that you could sell?
Perhaps, we could.
Anyway, I think that Tom has had to dash off to take receipt of deliveries, so I'm going to step into his shoes.
It's a racial game. Take the chip
on before Hugh gets.
Are you Jackie Weaver
in trouble? I'm going to boot you right out of this call.
You have no authority, Rach. No authority.
Rach, that's standing orders.
I've got the authority now.
My dad's on the parish council in Son and Common, and I now. Just every time I see him, I say, have you read the standing orders?
Right, let's move on. So here is Jeremy with how you can get in touch with us.
Get in touch with the team. Email hello@realreadingpodcast.co.uk. Find us on Twitter and Instagram @realreadingpod. And join our Facebook group by searching Real Reading Podcast.
Thank you, Jeremy, as always. Right, let's move on to our headlines of the week then. Hugh, I am glad that you are back for this one, because when I read the article earlier, I thought, I've got nothing beyond, this is outrageous to say about this. So the first story is about Reading Council tax going up by, I think it said 5% in the article. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so do you want to give us a bit more information around that?
Yeah, essentially, from what I remember, and I couldn't, don't quote me on this entirely, certainly in Reading, council tax has gone up by 5%. For
I thought that was it. I thought, oh, you've got no more than me to say about it. Right?
It's been a 5% it's been a 5% increase in council tax in Reading and various other parts of Berkshire for at least the last 5 years, I'd say. It goes up by the maximum amount every year. This is because councils no longer get money from the government in the way that they used to and haven't since 2010. And therefore, the things that councils have to do hasn't gone away. And in fact, with things like pandemics and various other things that we have to deal with nowadays, the things that councils have to do, like looking after children and looking like after adults and providing various services like having your bins collected and stuff like that are still in place. So the councils really have no choice but to put up council tax every year, and people complain about it. But the council doesn't get any help, essentially. It doesn't get money which would cover adult social care or children's services from the government, which would then mean your council tax would, I mean, it's not going to go down, but it might not go up by the maximum amount you're allowed every year. But this is how councils have to pay for things now, and it goes back to the ratepayer. There are some criticisms of people saying, why is it we have to then subsequently fund a council who can't manage its own accounts, going back to this ongoing issue Reading have had with accounting going back three or four years now, at considerable cost. We've talked about it before, it's quite a dry subject. Basically, the council wasn't able to file its accounts because they weren't accurate for, I can't remember which year it is off the top of my head, but it's quite a while ago, but it had a knock-on effect on the accounts of the following year, and I think the year after that as well. And a lot of people are saying you know, it's the cost of sorting it out has been substantial, and it's definitely not a great look for the council not to file it, not to to come across like it can't manage its money. But yeah, you know, the council, the tax goes up and it gets a lot of it gets reinvested in things. It doesn't just sit in a pot. So you've got road resurfacing, everyone's favorite subject, potholes. Everyone's road is the worst potholed road in Reading. And so everyone wants their road to be repaired. So that's what's going to happen. You know, two new swimming pools are being planned, and hopefully will get built at some point in the next couple of years. That costs money. There's new food waste collection, which we've talked about before, which needs funding. Various other projects. New council houses, which Reading, I think, has been particularly good at providing extra council homes. Lots of plans in place, lots of homes being built, lots more on the way. And all this, you know, money comes from government for particular projects like building houses, but the council has to get money from council tax and all that sort of stuff. And so I'm afraid this is the way it is when it comes to council tax. And you'll find my council tax in South Oxfordshire is bound to go up exponentially as well, probably by the full amount. Tom, when you move to West Berkshire, you'll find the same thing again. All councils will be putting up their council tax. Conservative, Labour, whatever. It's just the way things are since the government got elected in 2010, and they changed the way that councils were funded, and they removed a lot of funding from councils like Reading, which has to be, but it's still expected councils to do as much as they possibly can with different funding streams. And so that's just the way it is now. And I'd be very surprised if you didn't have a 5% increase in council tax every year from now on until things change.
Oh.
Thanks, Hugh.
Yeah, that's not. It's just more money every year.
I only caught part of that because my new mattress arrived at a really inconvenient moment. But thanks, Rach, for taking over. I was going to have some opinions on this, but then I realised I'm not going to be paying Reading Borough Council for much longer. So I thought maybe not.
That's not to say the next election is not for ages, and if the government was to change, it's not to say that all of a sudden no one would have to pay any council tax ever again. It would probably still go up most years anyway. It's just the way things are. So I'm afraid it's not a political thing. I think it's just how things have changed. And I don't think a change of government would necessarily mean everyone thinking their council tax wouldn't go up by as much. But who knows? But
shall we talk about nightclubs turning into flats? Unless anybody has anything pressing to say about council tax rises? No, Paul? Good, good, excellent. Oh, dear. This is the news that the building that was called the Ponana? I think that's how
Ponana,
it's...
yeah. Yeah, my brother used to be a bouncer there.
Oh, did he really?
Really?
Many years ago.
I was really hoping there would be some memories of this nightclub. I seem to recall it's basically on Duke Street, just by the bridge where the subway is. And you used to go down the stairs. I'm sure I went there once. I did put this out on our social media just to see if anybody came back with any memories of it, and they did. I will just read out a couple of those. We had one from
Rich
JM.
Had a good one, didn't he?
Oh yes, your husband has been on. I was saving that one till last. That
oh, okay. Yeah, give him his moment. Yep.
So we've got at JM1874B6, snazzy, but he said, so many, it was brilliant. I can't believe it was 10 plus years ago, but there's something really sad about both Ponana and the AD being gone forever. They represented something different away from identikit spaces on Friar Street. That's just on our Twitter page at Real Reading Pod. I will come back to your husband in just a moment, Rach, but there was a couple of posts on Facebook as well, which we had. Dave Moore, a friend of the pod, said, I remember when I first went there, I thought it was big, and then I realised it had all those mirrors on the wall and it was quite small, which is something I vaguely remember. And then another friend of the pod, Steve Lutwich, said it was the legendary Hawaiian bar before it was Ponana, back when it was all fields around here. And he's just asterisked that with actually a bus depot, which I do not remember it when it was a bus depot. I'm that young.
It's the Oracle, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that. I'm so old.
I think you're either you're one of two people in Reading. You remember when it was a bus depot, and you don't remember when it was a bus depot. Those are the only two situations, aren't they? I think
the two categories of people.
Yes. And Rach, your husband Richard at Richard K. Nemeth said, meeting Sean Ryder in there when he was DJing, so off his trolley, all he could mutter was, "I've got some remixes for you." Which was, because I think it looked like it had its fair share of well-known people. I did dig out an article from when we were at Reading about when it closed, which was I think it looks like it was 9th of May 2008. So it's been over 10 years. But just there were some interviews there with people who were very sad it was closing. Claire Smith, the general manager, said the venue was closing due to a lease renewal and rent increase at the site. You know, as I say, tale as old as time. But she'd worked there for a decade. Loads of highlights with lots of DJs, DJ Yoda, Freak Nasty, and the Stanton Warriors. These are all names that are not even slightly ringing a bell.
I was going to say, you've got all those albums, right?
Oh, yes. They are going to be an absolute pain to pack up when it does come to mind. And just what was also interesting in this old article was when it closed, they opened Sakura Club in Gun Street to sort of replace it as a move, which I believe is now also closed. So it's kind of been through several several different bits and pieces. So Paul, you say your brother was a bouncer.
Yeah, but I never went there, so that's really killed that, hasn't it? Yeah. But I do love the story about Sean Ryder in there. He was an interesting individual. Well, still is alive. He's not dead. I'd like to confirm that. And he enjoyed the nightlife. Let's just say it that way.
Yeah. I think I did speak to Rich about that before we came on, and I think it was at a point where Sean Ryder was a bit perhaps down on his luck, shall we say. So he was just like trying to earn some cash where he could. So he was doing his rounds of the club. But he's bounced back. He's on Gogglebox now, isn't he? So he's earning a bit of cash from there. But I can't.
Yeah, from playing headlining at the Reading Festival, he's now on Gogglebox.
I was gonna. Is any so Tom? You've been there once.
I think
Paul,
so.
You've never been, and Hugh. I can't.
I've
imagine.
Been there. I can vaguely remember. Vaguely remember it. Been not really my type of place. In that
surprises me.
It was. It was very kind of genre specific sort of music. You go in there and you the music you wouldn't know it a lot of the time. And it was, you know, it was okay. It was quite a relaxed sort of place, I seem to remember. It was it was underground, wasn't it? It was it was underneath the wherever that office or wherever it is. But yeah, it wasn't a place I frequented regularly, but it was okay. Sakura, that's 3-0 degrees, isn't it now?
No, Sakura is the table tennis one.
Oh, Smash, is that what it's called?
Smash, that was it, yes. Which sadly didn't do Mash, which was
well, there's one for the kids, isn't there?
Is there any pictures, Tom, in that article you referenced about from when it closed? Because in my head I need to know if I've kind of, I only went there a handful of times, I think, but I've built this image up in my head of what it looked like, and that image is that it was like being in a bar in Morocco.
Yeah,
a bit Moroccan-y. yeah
Yeah. I am sure some of our Facebook commentators will remind us, maybe even have some pictures. That would be nice as well. Come back to us with some of those. So I'll put a little shout out for some of those. But yeah, there's only a picture I can see of the front. Okay. I think one of the overriding feelings that one of the overriding points that people brought up was that they were very surprised it was a chain, because there were Ponarnars all over. I definitely didn't know that. One in London. There was one in London. Apparently, there's one in Bath, and there have been ones in Newcastle and Norwich and various other places. So,
Is that like Yokeford? Because Yokeford's got another one, hasn't it? It's got one in Shepherd's Bush. Really?
Oh dear. Well,
just on the there's going to be, if this gets permission, there's going to be a lot of houses there. There's already permission for 77, the office, to be converted into 77 flats, and then this application proposes another 36. So that's 113. Is that right? Maths good. Gosh. Is that right? So it's quite a lot. It's quite large housing. I mean, it's an existing office, so it'll be converted in, rather than rebuilt. That's fairly substantial housing area right in the middle of town.
Yeah.
Again, I can't imagine there'll be many cars, but it's an interesting plan. And I wonder how much more of this we'll see with the future of offices and the future of shops, high street shops and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Changing, whether we'll see more offices and retail units converted into housing, and people will start living in town centres, and there'll be more restaurants and nightlife and stuff like that, and fewer shops, as it were, and offices. But we'll have to see.
I suppose we probably should talk about the actual development as well, shouldn't we, rather than just reminiscing.
Being nostalgic.
I don't know, better they turn old offices into places to live rather than building on green fields, I suppose.
I think the inherent, my view on this is always that it's better to use buildings for something than have them standing empty. And if it means turning them into housing, if there's a demand for housing to turn an existing building into a block of flats, then you should do that rather than just it, you know, that nightclub's been closed since 2008. And, you know, that's what, 13 years. So do something with it. It's there.
Was it potentially good for the town centre anyway, if you've got however many 130 odd new houses there with multiple people living in them?
They're all occupied. That's a minimum of 133 people in the town centre.
Well, thank you for the maths, but I'm just thinking that right in the town centre that would be perhaps more inclined to pop out for a drink at the local bar or pub, or, you know, pop into town to do a bit of shopping, just driving traffic into the town centre, not cars, obviously. Yeah. Driving footfall into the town centre, which can only be a positive, can't it?
Yeah, and
especially retail, after the past year,
the economy will adapt, won't they? If all these people are living in the town, so you've got there, and places like Station Hill and all these other developments, then businesses will come to them, whether it's a restaurant or a gym or a cinema or whatever, or shops. You know, people going to go to the supermarket, aren't they, if they live in town, or go to buy clothes and stuff like that, then the economy should theoretically thrive. If you've got a doorstep market 10 years down the line, you should see lots of interesting businesses around the area. What they'll be, I don't know, but it's a change, isn't it? I was going to make another point then, I can't remember for the life of me what it was. So edit that out.
Okay. All right. Should we talk about the slightly fluffier idea of how people from Berkshire can become a contestant on BBC Two quiz show Mastermind? I don't know if you've heard of it. this is news that people at the BBC are asking people to apply to go on Mastermind because apparently they are draining, running out of people to go on. So they want more people. And you can apply by emailing mastermind.hth@hattrick.com. And there's an application form.
This is absolutely not one for me.
Is it not?
No. I am a typical, like, what is it, jack of all trades, master of none.
Would you not have a specialist subject?
No, and I think I did kind of learn something about Mastermind fairly recently that I just assumed that the people that went on there had a very specialist interest in Reading Football Club or Fawlty Towers I've got on the page in front of me. Oh, that's one of the...
That's, yes.
Not allowed. Anyway, come back to that. But it seems like it's not necessarily something they are hugely interested in to start with. They pick a subject and then go and research it to go on the programme.
Oh, well, that's very calculated and cold.
It is, isn't it?
I thought it was all a bit sort of more... What's the word they used to use for football clubs that were going through a process? It was holistic or something like that, where it was like, oh, well, I know loads about train branding between in the mid-1990s, so I'm going to answer that question.
Wow, that was niche there, Tom, wasn't it?
That is Tom's subject right there.
Insight there for the listeners into the canning brain now, wasn't it?
Or 1990s Sabutio teams or something like that. You know? But no, it's not.
What would your subject be, Tom? I think non-league football, Berkshire non-league football.
Berkshire non-league football, probably. Although I'm not particularly knowledgeable. Thing is, I retain useless things, but I don't really retain anything useful. Like, I don't retain things very well.
Me neither.
If I sat down and really thought about it, yeah, probably could, but I can't remember really things in any specific order. Paul, what about you? What would yours be?
Yeah, everyone would be thinking, oh, here do you read an FC, yeah. But obviously I'd want to avoid that. That's the obvious one. If I was going to pick one just off the top of my head, I would probably say Suede, the band.
Okay.
I really love them.
Oh, no, Suede. I thought you said Slade there for a second.
No. Not Slade. I might just do that to be obtuse.
my favourite fact about Suede the band was that they had a guitarist who left, and then the new guitarist replaced them was a bloke who used to play along to their songs in his bedroom. Yeah. I thought that's, and I don't know if they're still around or they're reforming.
Oh, no, they're still around. They're still releasing stuff. That's Richard Oakes you're talking about there. Yeah. And yeah. They're quality. I've read both of Brett Anderson's books and kind of, he doesn't call them autobiographies because he's pretentious. And it is an interesting, yeah, I love them. And both me and my girlfriend love them. So fantastic. I'd be rubbish on Mastermind though with it because they pick out really specific things, you know. Like, which album did they release and have a really rare B-side on it? I'd be no use of that at all.
I'd have three. Thanks for asking, Tom.
I was just...
I got three. Music of Iron Maiden would be definitely one of mine. In fact, I actually watched I got a tip-off from someone a few years ago saying there's a bloke on Mastermind whose specialist subject is the music of Iron Maiden. So I was like, right. So I had a little Maiden off with him in the in my living room on my own. And he did beat me, but I got one of the questions right that he got wrong. And then he got a couple that I didn't know. But also, I think I'd be pretty good on 80s/90s cartoons and 1990, late 1990s, early 2000s WWE/WWF wrestling.
I'm really hoping wrestling would be in there.
I think I'd be pretty good on that era of wrestling. I'm pretty good at.
I think this is what should happen. There should be a special spin-off episode of this podcast of just in-house Mastermind. We have to pick a topic.
Yeah,
and there are five or six questions.
This is a great.
Would you like to know the interesting fact about Iron Maiden that links them to the town of Rennick?
Yes.
Vaguely.
The lead singer of Iron Maiden is a man called Bruce Dickinson, who is an exceptional individual who is extremely talented. He, as well as being a singer of an excellent singer in terms of his range and his ability, he also flies their tour plane and was an almost Olympic level fencer in his youth as well. In the 1980s, he was in a band called Samson, I believe, who were playing at Reading Festival at the same time as Iron Maiden, who had another singer at the time, who was a guy called Paul Di'Anno, who was going down the route of drugs and alcohol on a fast scale. And the manager of Iron Maiden got hold of this Bruce Dickinson guy, and in the Holiday Inn in Reading, he said, "Do you want to join Iron Maiden?" And Bruce said, "Yes, I do." And so the incarnation of Iron Maiden, which stood for many, many years and is still going to this day, long grey haired men running around the stage like lunatics, in times where we're allowed to go to concerts and things like that, was born in the Holiday Inn in Reading in the 1980s. And that is what links Iron Maiden to Reading. I read that in Bruce Dickinson's very disappointing autobiography.
I presume you'll be writing that up for Berkshire Live this weekend.
I have mentioned it in the past in stories, yes, linking Iron Maiden to Reading.
Right. I cannot wait to see an Iron Maiden Berkshire Live story on the Facebook page. That would be absolutely fantastic. That will get
the hell out of it.
They also played at Bracknell Leisure Centre in their early days.
They
did. Well.
This is a story I'm working on. I'm working on something on that. They played three times at least at Bracknell Leisure Centre, which is fantastic. Okay, shall we move on? We need to just move on because time is a ticking. But in the meantime, that is the end of part one. In part two, we'll go straight to the random question.
The random question.
Hey guys, we're back after a short break, barely even 30 seconds. It is random question time. Paul, I can see you limbering up for this one. The random question today, who is your hero?
Oh God, that's a really tough question, isn't it? I mean, a really, really tough question. A hero.
This is when you wish you'd read the script ahead of time.
Yeah, I have read it, and I was thinking about the time. When I read it, I thought, I don't really have one. I guess when I was a young kid, I would have had someone at Reading. It would have been a player, probably someone like Trevor Senior. But now, when I'm a 45-year-old man, I'm not sure I really have a hero.
That's okay. It's okay. Yeah. I don't know.
Have you got someone in your mind then, Tom? This question's obviously come from somewhere.
John Bon Jovi.
No, this question has come from the list of random question sheet that I Google every Thursday morning when I'm flapping around for a random question. And it was the first one I saw that I thought might make a good question. Turns out I was wrong. I don't have anyone off the top of my head, although I'm sure as soon as we stop recording, three will come to me.
I guess if I did have to have one, it would be the person who performed my heart and lung transplant over 20 years ago, so Magdi Yacoub.
That is a good one.
I guess he would be, not because of what he did for me, but for what he has done for thousands and probably hundreds of thousands of people around the world. And also, when you meet him, he is the humblest person you'll ever meet. He performs miracles on a daily basis when he was working. He's retired now, still in research. But he's just performed miracles and changed my life and thousands of other people. And to have that power and to still be a really humble person, that is a special individual, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is indeed. If we're going down that sort of route, I think... If I had a hero, so Hugh, you met my old friend Daryl, and I think Rach, you may have met Daryl as well.
I met him quite a few times,
And he passed away. Now it would have been 2 years ago now, 2 years ago in April, and the more that I kind of look back at his life and his upbringing and what he had to deal with. You know, his mum died when he was young. His dad wasn't around. He brought up his younger brother. He missed out on, you know, almost an entire teenage year, his entire teenage years. And, you know, 20s when all of us are going out and getting absolutely leathered at Ponarnas, to just link it back to an earlier point. You know, he was looking after his brother and everything he went through. He had a heart defect, like I don't know if it was like yours, Paul. I'm not sure, but he had a pig's bladder, and then he had a mechanical valve added to his heart, both of which didn't end up saving him, unfortunately, and he passed. So I think just looking back at everything, and I guess when I say he would be a hero of mine, just purely he was just a really nice bloke who had time for absolutely everyone, often to the detriment of himself. And so, yeah, I think I didn't really think about that. I wasn't going to go down this route. I was just thinking, yeah, John Bon Jovi, yeah. But actually, when you really get into it, maybe that's what it's more about than some celebrity who I've never met and I'm never going to meet, because John Bon Jovi doesn't come to Reading or Bracknell for that matter. Anyone else?
If we're allowed to go for real life people, then not just, I was thinking celebrity, but you guys have perhaps made it more tangible. So a bit cheesy, but I've got two then. One is my dad, just because he is always there to help me out with anything. Probably the most significant thing is when I bought the house that I'm sat in now, that was a bit of a relic, to be honest. And then we spent the best part of the year, every waking hour that we weren't at work, he was here with me renovating it. And to be honest, it nearly broke both of us. We were exhausted, but I have a nice home thanks to him. That was the biggest thing, but there's just constant like little things that he helps with along the way. And then like recent weeks, in fact, I'm going to pop my midwife, Rosemary, on there, who saw me through giving birth 3 weeks ago. And she was amazing. A woman of very few words, but she was exactly what I needed. Very straight talking, direct, guided me through it, and it went as well as giving birth can, thanks to her, I think. So those are my two.
Lovely. Hugh.
Well, there's people you admire, isn't there? There's people in life that you think you admire. Like just recently, England have been playing cricket in India, and the bowler Jimmy Anderson, who's produced an outstanding performance, basically won England the game in India. He's 38. He's got all sorts of records. He still looks like he's in his 20s. He's sort of stick thin, highly athletic, and he's just clearly dedicated it from again going back to this sort of teenage years thing. He dedicated his whole life to excelling in one thing, and you just think that's pretty impressive. And I'm not saying he's necessarily my hero, but the sort of dedication that these people have to just being as good as you can possibly be is admirable. What is also, it constantly blows me away in my job, and I've spoken to many people like this over the years. It's the parents who have children who have very, very rare conditions which make their lives incredibly difficult. I spoke to a lady, she's not from Reading, she's from Bracknell actually. Her little boy has got a condition where it's quite a complicated condition, but basically it means they have to be incredibly careful, otherwise he ends up in hospital with problems with his lungs. So for example, he can't go near anywhere where there's wood chips. So he can't essentially go to most, he's three, and he can't go to most playgrounds. So every time, you know, COVID has been an absolute nightmare for them. And every time they want to do anything with him, if they need to go for a walk with him, they have to work out, they have to basically go and do the walk themselves and then work out what's there, what they might encounter. You know, he can't go in long grass and stuff like that, for example, because his immune system doesn't work, essentially. So he ends up with these infections, which leave him in hospital for sort of 4, 5, 6 weeks at a time. He's about to start school. The story I did was that they're looking for a bone marrow donor for him, because it is a curable condition, but it is complicated for him because he's got various very complex ethnic makeup. I forget which, but the people who actually can register as donors for him is a very limited pool of people. So they want to put this information out as far as they can. And you just think, like, every day must be, you've got to be so careful. And there's various other people with these children who have these conditions, living every single day, where they know if they don't meticulously plan what's going to happen, that it could lead to disaster. And you've just got to admire the kind of resolve and resolution of these people to, one, to try to help their kids get better, but two, just to keep going when in this situation. They find themselves in, they don't ever complain about it, you know, then they just get on with it, and they work with charities and stuff like that who give them a little bit of help. And you just think, you just admire the resolve of the human race when they fight faced with these predicaments, that they just adapt to life as it is, to make sure that their child and their is safe and is as happy as can be. And then if it turns out they need operations or donors or to go abroad to get specialist treatment, they then set about doing that. And you kind of think, you just admire them for doing whatever it takes to make sure that their child is safe and happy. And I think that's it always, I mean, I've been doing this job for 15, 16 years, and it always sort of blows me away, the like I say, the resolve and the determination these people have in what is, look, from the outside you think that is a really, really, really difficult thing to do. So that's what you know, inspires me, I guess. And you know, I always think that people should, if you're in a position to help people in these really unfortunate situations, you should do, really.
I just presumed after last week you'd say He-Man, but there we go.
Oh, and The Rock.
And The Rock. I've just thought of another. Can I throw one more in before we move on? I'm not opening myself up for more abuse, but I'm going to throw my son's teachers in the mix. Given the past couple of months, are true heroes to school our children day in, day out.
And anyone who works for the NHS as well should probably get a mention as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not been easy for them.
No.
For a question where we all sort of scratched our heads a bit and went, oh, I don't really, heroes. Now, like, we're thinking of loads.
Local news journalists. Anybody?
Yeah, if you want. Yeah.
Put that with the beggar guy in the bottom of the list.
What about that guy that sold Rach down the river the other week? Wrote that story.
Oh, no, not him. No.
Stitched her right up. What, yeah.
He did. He threw me right under the bus. And no, he is not my hero right now.
Right. Thank you very much, guys. We need to just wrap things up here. If you would like to contribute, though, here is Jeremy with how you can get in touch with us.
Get in touch with the team. Email hello@realreadingpodcast.co.uk. Find us on Twitter and Instagram @realreadingpod, and join our Facebook group by searching Real Reading Podcast.
Thank you, Jeremy. That is quite enough for this week. We'll be back again next week with probably, you know, similar amounts. Paul, will we see you next week?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I like, if I'm invited.
Yeah, I think I like it.
Always.
If you feel free to get in touch with us on Facebook and Twitter, and if you have a moment, please give us a rating and a review on your podcast app. We'll be back next week for more Readingy podcast goodness. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
You're listening to the Real Reading Podcast.